the stately homes of England we proudly represent. We only keep them up for Americans to rent. Though the pipes that supply the bathroom burst and the lavatory makes you fear the worst, it was used by Charles the First, quite informally, and later by George the Fourth, on the journey north.
Stately Homes of Wiltshire, Chapter 5. The quarter moon swam in and out of sight as clouds drifted in puffy bursts across the night sky. Mr. Coles has shut his pub for the evening, and the only light on the narrow street came from the gas lantern mounted high on the building's wall. Draco eyed the immense figure of Gregory Goyle, whose stubborn allegation of sobriety had been disproven several times throughout the night, although he wouldn't admit it. "I am fine to apparate," Greg insisted, pounding his meaty fist on his open palm. "Not 15 minutes ago you were crying about how much you loved Ginny Weasley's chasing strategy," Draco said, with tears and everything. "Yeah, well, she's a brilliant player," Greg swayed, his eyes going watery again. "I feel bad about how I did stuff back then, because she's so good." Draco thought that perhaps Greg should feel bad about how he did stuff back then, because she was a human being, but that wasn't really Greg's area. Lucky for him, Greg slept fine. "I'll get him home," Pansy said, rolling her eyes. Pansy was not particularly drunk, although she had drank at least as much as Greg and was about a third his size. Her iron constitution, now legendary in Slytherin House, was part genetics and part sheer bullheadedness. "You all right there, Potter?" Harry was petting some moss that was growing alongside the pavement. Potter did not have an iron constitution. Potter's constitution was made, perhaps, of tissue paper. "Brilliant," he said. "He's fine," Draco told her. "Yes, he is," Pansy muttered, raising a wicked eyebrow. Draco moved closer so he could whisper without Harry overhearing. "So you suddenly approve of him? You were doing a nice impression of someone putting him through the ringer back there." "Oh, I'm not sure I approve," Pansy said at a normal volume. "I do, however, find this whole thing hilarious." "I can definitely apparate by myself, no question," Greg informed them again. He wobbled on the spot and Pansy caught him under the arm. "I appreciate your support," Draco said dryly, "as I am sure Greg appreciates yours." "Completely fine," Greg said, nodding. "Absolutely ready." Harry had attempted to stand up and wobbled alarmingly. He braced himself on Draco's shoulder. "Gravity, am I right?" "Indeed," Pansy said, shooting a delighted and more than slightly demonic grin in Draco's direction. "Indeed, Potter. You know, this is the chosen one, right here. There he is, and he can't stand up." "Not chosen anymore," Harry pointed out, literally, as his finger was about an inch from Pansy's pert nose. "War's over. Just a one, not a chosen one." Harry flopped his hand back and managed to hit Draco in the face. "Oh, sorry." "That's all right," Draco said. He backed away from Potter, checking to see if he remained upright. Pansy's expression could be described as cat amongst the pixies. "What do you think, Draco? Is he the one?" "I will set fire to your entire wardrobe," Draco said. "Don't test me." "That might be good," Greg said heavily. "Pansy, you're my friend and everything, but some of your clothes are really weird."
"I could spinch you," Pansy told him. She adjusted his considerable weight on her shoulder.
"Nah," Greg said. "You wouldn't. You're my friend."
"You're all friends," Harry slurred. "That's great. I'm happy about that."
Draco couldn't look directly at Harry, because if he did, he was sure his face was going to do something awful that Pansy would mock for 87 years.
"You're all right, Potter," Greg decided.
His heavy eyebrows pulled down over his eyes like he had to concentrate.
"You're all right too, Goyle," Harry said, beaming, as he swayed relentlessly forward. "I like your opinions on Quidditch."
"Oh my God," Pansy muttered. "Okay, I'm getting Greg out of here before these two drunkies make a blood pact of eternal friendship or something equally daft."
"Wise," Draco said. Pansy took Greg's arm more securely. As Greg began to wave goodbye, Pansy gave him a great yank, and they both popped out of existence with a familiar ear-splitting crack. Draco eyed the surrounding Muggle buildings, hoping that no one had been looking out of their window. Potter had wandered off again, like a drunk house cat.
It's nice to think that, like... Harry was off to Draco's left, stroking the worn stone wall of the pub. Like, this place has been here for longer than we've been alive. It's older than the war. It's older than our grandparents.
It's older than the United Kingdom, Draco said, because he was fairly sure the pub had once been an inn, founded sometime in the 13th century.
Right! Right, it's seen all these wars, and it's still here.
It'll keep being here after we're dead. Harry's skin looked poreless in the moonlight. He gazed up at the building with a faint smile. Still serving drinks, like nothing ever happened, after people forget. If Draco were more drunk, or less principled, he'd push Harry right up against that stone wall and kiss him until he was gasping.
Come on, Morbid, he said instead. We've got a long walk back.
Sometime between the edge of the village and the pheasant walk, Harry took Draco's hand, easy, as casual as if he'd been picking up his satchel on his way out the door. He didn't say anything about it, so Draco wasn't about to ask him what the hell was going on. He forced himself not to think too hard about the press of Harry's calloused palm against his own. Their hands were almost exactly the same size.
That's Hinky Punk's stream. Feeds into the River Nadder, Draco said desperately, pointing at the water as they passed over the little bridge. And that village is the Swallows.
That doesn't look much like a river.
Not yet, Draco told him. It will. Further down.
Harry hummed thoughtfully. Their footsteps cracked twigs and crushed grass. Other than the quiet rustling of small animals in the dark, the landscape was silent. They passed under an immense oak tree, and Harry tilted his head so far back Draco was slightly concerned he'd trip over something.
What's this called?
Augury Wood. Draco tugged Potter out of the way of a smaller tree.
I like how everything here has a name, Harry said, swinging their hands between them. People name things they care about.
Draco's heart clenched painfully.
The ancient scarred door set into the high rag wall to the gardens required some finagling to open, but still Harry did not let go of Draco's hand.
Those are beech trees, Draco said, his heart doing some kind of tap dance in his ribcage, and chestnut up ahead.
I like that you know the names of things. Trees and flowers.
Harry tilted his face up to the dappled moonlight. When I was little, I always asked the name of things, but my aunt and uncle just yelled at me to stay quiet. So I used to follow other families around when we'd go places. Sometimes they'd tell their kids what the flowers were called.
Draco did not know what to say. He held tight to Harry's hand.
In the spring, the paths are all covered with bluebells and daffodils. The apple trees flower, all over there. Larkspurs and snapdragons. I'll show you.
Harry turned and smiled at him, his teeth a flash of white in his shadowed face.
If only Draco were drunker, or less principled, he would push Harry beneath those apple trees and make him forget his name. It was honestly becoming more and more difficult to remember that Harry was very drunk and Draco was not for him. He wouldn't be looking at him like that, with his eyes flickering to Draco's mouth. If they weren't drunk, he wouldn't.
You're such a lightweight, Potter, Draco huffed, striding forward and trying not to look around at Harry. Saviour of the wizarding world, and you're knocked out after a couple of shots and a pint.
Ron says I'm an emotional drunk.
I've noticed.
Draco guided Harry around some enterprising brambles.
You nearly pledged eternal friendship to Gregory Goyle.
I just said he was all right, Harry protested.
Have you met us, Potter? That is tantamount to a proposal.
You're all right too, Draco.
Draco did not swallow his tongue, but if he had, he really could not have been blamed.
Now you're just throwing your affection at everyone, you trollop.
Harry laughed. Did you know it's March?
That is how the passage of time works.
I've been here a month.
A month during which you didn't have to be on other cases where people were being tortured.
Drunk as he was, Harry still shot him a look.
That's my job, he said.
Your awful job that you hate.
Harry pulled his hand away. Draco did not want to admit that he missed it. It's what I was made for. What you were made for. Watch the actual fuck, you pillock. Harry had overtaken him, even though Draco's legs were longer. He shrugged with one shoulder, and Draco watched the back of his bare neck. He really ought to be wearing a scarf. I've been fighting dark magic since I was 11. Which is, point, not something you should have had to do. Who else would? Said Draco, looking with growing alarm at the back of Harry's head. Adults? Actual auras? Frankly, I am disturbed that a prepubescent boy was entrusted with the saving of the world so frequently. I don't think that's responsible behaviour. And I suppose that time you tried to destroy the world when you were 16 and didn't leave that to adults, that was all right. Harry stumbled over a couple of words, but really it was admirable how sober he sounded. Then he tripped over and caught himself on a stone bench. I wasn't trying to destroy... Draco took a deep breath and caught up with Potter, dragging him upright again. I was almost of age and a fucking idiot. It's not the same. Well then, get off my back about my job. Harry crossed his arms tightly across his chest. He was not looking at Draco with those green, green eyes anymore. He was squinting through his glasses and frowning. Clearly no one else is going to get on your back about it, Draco muttered. Harry turned in a slow circle, squinting into the distance. How big is this bloody garden? I feel like we've been here for weeks. About 10 acres. It has a forest in it. Sort of, Draco said. That part is called the wilderness. Huh, said Harry. The corner of his mouth twitched. Draco could spot the exact moment that Harry softened and gave in to the handful of pints, the moonlight night, and the names of things, that strange creature. It's been a garden for 500 years, you know, Draco told him, knowing that Harry would like that. He did not tell him that parts of the garden would eat him if he got too close. Harry wouldn't like that. Huh, Harry said, smiling. They resumed walking, weaving through brambles and trees, and reached the door to the kitchen within 10 minutes. They took the Le Fay staircase. Harry patted the heads of the decorative snakes, which Draco tried not to find endearing. On the first floor, Coote peered suspiciously around the corner of the green passage, but Draco waved her off, mouthing, I have it handled, in decreasing speed and increasing emphasis, until she nodded reluctantly and backed off. Am I in the painted room again? Draco guided Harry around the suit of armour. Seeing as that's where we've made the bed, yes. You've made the bed in your room. Draco let go of Harry's arm. That is generally what one does. Remember that night when we crashed into each other in the dark? Right over there. Harry pointed to a spot that was not at all where they had actually collided. I remember almost dying of a head trauma from a flying footstool. Harry laughed. A bubbling sort of thing that sounded almost innocent. He leaned towards Draco, and Draco ducked away. Draco, just... Harry touched Draco's neck, his shoulder. Just let me... Draco stepped hastily out of his reach. Potter, we're on the wrong side of the courtyard, and your room is... Oh! Harry had stumbled over a discarded piece of armour from some long-forgotten suit. He fell down in a spectacularly messy way, scattering further bits of chainmail as he went. Damn, he said from the floor. Draco hauled him back up with some effort. Bed, Draco told him, hoping he sounded businesslike and not strangely overwhelmed. Or I'll have to get Coote to help you. She has absolutely no bedside manner for drunkards. Bed, Harry agreed, sounding chastened. Sorry. Draco turned his face away so that Harry could not see him wince. It's fine, you numpty. Let's get you back to the terrifying murals. When Harry met Hermione for lunch, she looked harassed, her hair rising from her head like a cloud. I can only really spare half an hour, she said. Do you mind if we just walk down to prep? No, said Harry honestly. Sometimes he preferred just grabbing a mediocre sandwich and eating on his feet, although Hermione did not generally approve of that impulse. They walked through Whitehall towards Charing Cross, dodging efficient people in suits. To all eyes, Hermione was certainly an efficient person in a suit. She walked faster than anyone her height should have been able to, given leg length. I am going to strangle Cuthbert Mockridge, Hermione told him, ploughing ahead through the crowded pavement. What a fusty old man. Sounds like a wanker. Harry had never met Cuthbert Mockridge. But if Hermione thought he was terrible, Harry agreed with her entirely.
"He treats the goblins like they're about to murder him at any provocation," Hermione grumbled. "It's incredibly unproductive for improved relations."
Harry murmured his assent and avoided tripping on a small and yappy dog.
"Sorry, Harry. I shouldn't get worked up about that again. I have another meeting with him in an hour."
Hermione slowed down, fixing him with an interested gaze.
"How did the full speed ahead go? Drinks with the Slytherins?"
Harry made a face. "I got drunk. We fought in the garden about something, God knows, and then I tried to kiss him and fell down."
Hermione's smile broadened into an irrepressible laugh. "So about on par with your usual romantic strategy?"
"Pretty much," said Harry, laughing. "But I've got, you know, strength of will and determination, or something. I'll muddle through somehow."
Pret-a-Manger heaved with the lunchtime rush, and Harry embarrassed himself thinking about how much Draco would like all the packaging and labels. He grabbed a chicken and avocado, paid for Hermione's baguette, and got out of there.
"Well," Hermione said as they walked back, "my working theory about Malfoy Manor is there must be some sort of enchantment on the owner, or current owner of the property."
"Really?"
Harry's voice came out garbled. He had just taken a large bite of sandwich.
"It has to be mobile," Hermione explained. "If the poltergeists appeared both in the village and in the house, the common denominator is Draco."
"Do you think it could be a curse?"
"No, unless his health is somehow compromised."
Hermione unwrapped her baguette carefully.
"Which it could be, I suppose. I don't think he's really the sharing type."
"No," Harry agreed. "But if he was in pain, he wouldn't be able to resist complaining about it. Probably at length. Maybe in verse."
Hermione shot him a look from the corner of her eye, amused.
"Full speed ahead?"
"Shut it," Harry said cheerfully.
They walked back to the ministry in the periodic drizzle. Hermione told him about the various grimoires she'd borrowed from Draco's library, and Harry wondered if it would be raining in Wiltshire when he got there. He liked the manor in the rain. The following day dawned unreasonably sunny, almost warm in that premature and unlikely way that made the entirety of London honestly believe that they could have a barbecue about 2 months in advance of summer. Harry decided to skip out on apparition and take the underground to the ministry. He passed 3 people in shorts on his walk to the station, even though everyone else was still in coats.
"Global warming," Morag said when Harry greeted her. "It's a scourge."
Morag hated summer, the sun and warm weather fashion. The days during which she could not wear her omnipresent leather jacket were days that Harry would end up filing more paperwork because Morag had got a little too hexy with a target. "How's the case?"
Morag sighed and slumped in her chair.
"Waiting on a report from the Flu Network Authority. Yours?"
"Possible lead," Harry said. "We'll see."
Morag put her chin on her hand.
"Well, you fucking done?"
Harry said. "Yes."
"Great. Get the hell out of here."
Morag turned towards her intricate wall art of disgusting photographs, clues, and pinned maps. Harry stared at her back for a split second, hoping that her increasing irritation was not due to her closing in on Fishelburn, but was, instead, fury that the degrees now were in double instead of single digits. He turned to leave, stomach sour. Ginger's assistant shot him a suspicious look, which he studiously ignored.
"Hey, mate," Ron said, catching his arm. "You got a minute?"
"Of course," Harry said, and followed him into his cubicle. The space was such a mess they could barely both fit.
"I wanted to say..." Ron seemed to gather his strength, settling his shoulders. "I don't want to be unsupportive. If you want to go to pubs with Malfoy, that's your business. And if Hermione wants to help him with his little ghost problem, that's her business."
"Wow," Harry said. "That hurt a little bit to get out."
"You have no idea," Ron sighed. "But I do, support you. I've almost come to terms with the whole thing. Nearly. Give me another week and a couple of pints and I'll be fully on board. Well, I won't be off board. Probably."
"What whole thing?" Harry said suspiciously. "What's Hermione said to you?"
Ron shook his head with an almost pitying smile. "She didn't have to say anything specific, mate. You're pretty transparent."
Harry wondered why, if he was so transparent, he never seemed to know what he was feeling.
"I don't want to talk about it."
"Glad to hear it," Ron said with palpable relief. "See you later."
"Definitely," Harry told him, and left the office at a jog.
Coote gave Harry's trainers a politely disgusted glance as Harry arrived at Malfoy Manor. Fashions, she sighed, and took them off to be cleaned. Harry found Draco in the Grand Hall, halfway up the ladder doing something to the windows. He admired the view for a long moment, before clearing his throat. Hermione has a theory, he said, and Draco turned around. All right, let's hear it. Draco climbed down to Harry's level. He looked increasingly tired with every step. 2 poltergeists last night. 2. Hermione says that it has to be something on you, on the air, or the... What's the word for when you actually own the place? Is it just owner? Lord of the Manor, Draco said. Harry made a face. Really? Still? What is this, medieval times? He does not show respect for the Lord of the Manor, grumbled the white-wigged portrait of someone Harry was fairly sure was Septimus Malfoy, the somethink. You simply must get with the changing times, darling, said the portrait of the woman with the champagne glass. She had invaded an enormous family portrait over the fireplace and was sitting on a decorative fountain, watching them with interested grey eyes. Draco ignored them both. I suppose you could say Chatelaine, but that's a bit French. Or Castellan, but the manor hasn't ever been much of a castle. You have dungeons. We call them cellars these days. Harry shrugged. All right, then. Something on the Lord of the Manor. She thinks we should check the inheritance enchantments. We'll need the muniments room. Through the small library, Draco told him. Harry kept up as they weaved through galleries and passages, feeling at last like he was starting to get his bearing amongst the jumble of doors and windows. It'll be wildly disorganised, Draco warned as they entered the familiar space. Harry looked around the room. He was surrounded on all sides by built-in bookcases or windows or portraits with no discernible doors other than the one they just entered through. Draco approached the bookcase to the right of the ornate fireplace. Keep up, Potter, he said, darting a pleased little look back at Harry. Here, press your wand up against this leopard's nostril. That's a sentence I've never heard before, Harry said, and did so. The carved leopard gave a great yawn and stretched. The bookcase creaked ominously, then swung open to reveal a large room beyond the library. Cabinets consumed every spare patch of wall, and stray boxes littered the plain wooden floor. Brilliant, Harry said feelingly. He hadn't seen a secret passage or a hidden room since Hogwarts, and he had just known the Malfoys had to have a couple. That this secret room was filled with very dull documents did nothing to damp his enthusiasm. Some day I'm going to get around to putting all this to rights. Thankfully, no one ever cared about it, so the occupation left well alone. As Draco pulled out the first drawer, Harry noticed that it extended far beyond the actual length of the cabinet. Extension charms on everything, Draco explained. We need it. The records here date, correspondence since the 14th century, household accounts since the 11th, broadsides, manuscripts, maps, some documents signed by Rowena Ravenclaw. Not Slytherin. You're so predictable, Potter. Draco's mouth twitched. Although, to be fair, it's not for lack of trying. Slytherin's descendants were always more interested in acquiring his artifacts than the heirs of the other houses. There we go, Harry said, nudging Draco's shoulder with his own. They spread out disintegrating parchment and leather-bound tomes, poring over tiny print and bizarre calligraphy. Draco knew a few translation charms that came in handy for all the old English. There has to be something consistent here. Harry thought about the scans, about how the silvery light of the spell has settled all over Draco like a fine dusting of snow. A dark spell, maybe. Draco shot an icy look in Harry's direction. Not everyone in my family have been into the dark arts, Harry. I know that, Harry said. He wanted to put a hand on Draco's back, his shoulder maybe, right along the spine, but wasn't sure whether that was allowed. Draco was looking extremely pointy. I know. And even the ones who were. Draco straightened the papers and shoved them back into the drawer. That's not all they were. I know. They were still people. Maybe they made some mistakes, or a lot of mistakes, or their interests were fucked up. Just... Draco shoved the drawer back into place with a clatter. Do you think that's what this house is built on? Dark magic and relentless ambition. That's all this is to you. Harry was never going to think Lucius Malfoy was anything less than a bastard, but he didn't know what it was like with parents. Harry did know, down to his bones that no matter how much of a bastard Lucius was, he loved his son. "That's not all this is to me," Harry said, putting his hands up like he was calming a startled Thestral.
"Certainly doesn't seem that way."
Draco pulled out another box and spilled it out over the floor. Something in his forehead twitched, doubtlessly the mistreatment of antique papers. Draco was funny about old things. He didn't mind when Harry broke a chair or loosened tiles on the roof, but he looked askance if some 400-year-old household inventory's got so much of a speck of dust on the ink. "There are some things about the house, about all pure blood culture, that I'm not keen on," Harry admitted. "I've never said otherwise." But Harry began to sort through the spilled records, carefully shooting a thin stream of air from his wand to clean them of dust. "I think places like this are also important. They've got magic right through them, like Hogwarts does, right into the foundations. They last. They've lasted through a lot, and if Professor Binns talked like you did, I might have learned anything about the history of magic, like, ever." Draco was facing away from him, but Harry could tell from his cheeks and the tilt of his ears that he was smiling. He went back to rustling through drawers. Harry waited for him to say something, and then couldn't wait any more. "All right?"
"All right, Potter. Merlin."
Draco turned round and he was trying not to smile, but his eyes crinkled at the corners. "Come on, help me sort through this." By the time Coote brought the silver tray of lunchtime sandwiches, Harry and Draco had a neat stack of possible enchantments that could, potentially, be construed as placed on the Lord of the Manor. There was a spell that allowed the Lord of the Manor to apparate even in the cellars, and the one that gave him jurisdiction over the house elves, and the one that tied him to the wards. There were spells to do with the trees, and spells to do with the garden, and spells to do with something called domain land. Draco tried to explain the difference between seigniory spells and manorial spells, but lost Harry somewhere around his recitation of the Nulle terre sans seigneur, which was all French to him. Draco sighed theatrically, making a big show of picking crumbs from Harry's sandwiches off the floor between them. "How can they expect an aura with absolutely no experience of these kind of properties to investigate them?" "I'm not sure if you've heard of this thing called learning," Harry said, eating the last of his sandwich. "It's the hot new trend in human experience." Draco leaned back against the cabinets, eyebrows encroaching his hairline. "And what exactly have you learned, then, Potter?" "An inexplicable attraction to posh gits with condescending manners, apparently." "I bet you," Harry dug through his pockets, "three sickles and a crumpled up receipt that I know the names of everything on this floor."
"Everything?"
"Nearly everything," Harry substituted, "in case there were any more secret rooms." Draco snorted. "All right, I look forward to my sudden windfall." They walked through the ground floor as Harry pointed at rooms and corridors, staircases and closets. He forgot the name of the long room off of the great hall, but made no more mistakes as they moved around the house clockwise. "Small library, muniment room," Harry said as they completed the loop, and Draco nodded. "Porbus room, south drawing room, and through there the stone court. Down there," Harry wrinkled his nose, "that corridor with the portrait of the knight that only speaks old English, and then the kitchen. Ethelred Passage."
"Ethelred Passage!"
There was a sort of light in Draco's eyes when he smiled at Harry now, and Harry gravitated towards it like a snake towards a hot lamp.
"Well done, Potter.
You admit I'm right. You missed three names," Draco said, and he turned round and began to walk back the way they had come. "Ethelred Passage, Colonnade Room, and Drawing Room."
"We did the Drawing Room," Harry said, and as he spoke he realised what Draco had meant.
Draco had led them not towards the south drawing room, but into the front hallway, straight up to the heavy oak doors that were always closed.
"Do you ever go in there?"
"No," Draco said. He pushed the bronze doorknobs open to reveal a large room with peeling, dark purple wallpaper. The crystal chandelier, repaired since Dobby had sent it crashing to the floor, hung with spiderwebs. The sumptuous marble fireplace looked grey with dust, and the burnt husk of a long table stretched the length of the room. A jumble of furniture had been pushed up against one wall and never removed. Harry felt 17 again, the phantom pain of a stinging jinx coasting over his face.
"When you left," Draco said quietly,
The Dark Lord arrived. Harry suppressed the urge to say, "Yeah, well, what did you expect?" He thought about what Pansy had said at the pub. It wasn't as if the house had a choice. But Draco had had a choice. He had let Death Eaters into Hogwarts, and then he had not identified Harry at the manor. Then his mother had saved Harry's life a little. Harry had made a choice once, in a dark bathroom when he was 16. They all made choices, little ones and big ones, over and over again, and who was to say which were right? "I can see your face doing that." Draco shot him a faintly amused look that soon went cold and distant. "I know. I know we deserved it." "I wasn't thinking that you deserved it," Harry said truthfully. "I did the wrong thing, Potter. You wouldn't have, would you? I got what was coming to me." Harry shrugged. "I did what I thought was right, but a lot of time I also just did what Dumbledore thought was right. Mostly I didn't think at all. I don't know how different that is to you in the end." "That is oddly philosophical of you," Draco said, surprised, "though I don't know if it's nihilism or pragmatism. Also, I don't think whatever Voldemort did was what you deserved." Draco still flinched at the name, his eyes darting around the room as if by reflex. "He stood there," he said, and pointed at the fireplace. "He would stand there, and we would have to come up one by one and answer to our crimes." "You were 17. You were a kid." "I had my choice. I had made it. I got what I deserved." Draco held his inner left forearm with white knuckles. Harry sat down in the middle of the wood floor. He felt like this was a sitting down sort of conversation. "You were 17. You made a mistake, and you got a mass murderer living in your home, alongside a whole host of other psychopaths. That's what you deserved." "The other Death Eaters, when they weren't at their own homes. My dear Aunt Bellatrix. A pack of werewolves, on occasion," Draco said. He stood by the fireplace, looking thoughtfully into the ashy remains of a long-gone fire. Fenrir Greyback and a handful of others. They made a den in one of the second-floor bedrooms. It smelled like you cannot even imagine. "You'd think they'd have gone outside since they were so big on the Call of the Wild." "Apparently winter was the point at which they decided to accept hospitality." "Your mother wanted you to go to therapy." "My mother could hardly pronounce the word," Draco said. He looked at the space in front of Harry like it might turn on him, but knelt and sat down, cross-legged, mirroring Harry exactly. Dust swirled in the space between them, catching the light from the long windows. "Hermione wanted you to go to therapy." "I mean, I probably ought to go," Harry admitted. "I don't know if you'd notice, but I'm kind of a mess." "You're just an idiot," Draco said. "Therapy can't fix that." "Cheers," Harry said, and caught Draco's warm eyes. "You should go to therapy too." "Talking," Draco said with disgust. "You talk to me." Draco leaned back on his hands, tilting his face up to the ceiling. "And now I am experiencing immense regret about that." "What are you going to do with the house?" "What are you going to do about your job?" They stared at each other, knees almost touching, eye to eye in the dusty room. Harry wanted to touch Draco's face, just along the curve of his cheekbone, and feel the sweep of his long eyelashes. He had such an odd, harsh face, but Harry thought he looked so good. "Stop that," Draco said in a strangled sort of voice. "Stop what?" "Your face," Draco said. He was looking at Harry like he couldn't help himself. "Doing that." "Fine," Harry said, and kissed him. Draco made a shocked sound. For a second, Harry thought he was just going to stay there frozen. But then Draco's mouth opened and Harry could not think at all. Draco wound his fingers in the long hair at the back of Harry's head and pulled. Harry could not help the whimper that escaped him. He would have been embarrassed if it weren't for the hot flare of desire that sent shockwaves through his body and puddled at the base of his spine. Draco broke away, looking almost startled, staring at him with his hands still tight in Harry's hair. "This is a bad idea," Draco said, but he was still clutching Harry's hair. and then he kissed him again. "This is the worst idea." They were horizontal now, which was brilliant. Draco straddled his lap, and when he shifted, Harry could feel. He could feel that Draco was hard. Harry was hard too, blindingly, blazingly hard. He did not know how Draco was able to form actual words, because all he could do was feel and feel and feel. "We're in the horrible drawing room," Draco said, fumbling for Harry's trousers. His eyes darted wildly down Harry's body. "Stop talking," Harry said. He took his glasses off, put them off to the side, and pulled the blurry shape that was Draco back down. Draco spoke into Harry's mouth, his tongue against Harry's lips like he couldn't pull away. "Forever now, when I walk through the house, it'll be like, 'That's where I broke my arm. That's where Pansy found the flying mouse. That's where the Dark Lord tortured people, and that's also where I fucked Harry Potter.'" "Sounds like an improvement," Harry gasped, as Draco's hips ground tortuously over his own. "I want to suck your cock." "What the fuck?" Draco said, and Harry took advantage of his surprise to flip their positions. Draco sprawled on the floor and tilted his head back, exposing a long line of pale neck. "What the fuck?" Draco covered his eyes, breathing hard. "I like how you say fuck," Harry said, and sucked a bruise into Draco's skin. "It makes me want to fuck. Merlin, strike me dead." Draco yanked Harry up by the hair and kissed him again, hungrily. Every scrape of his teeth sent shockwaves through Harry's whole body. "Have you done this before? With a man?" "Yes." Harry was very interested in what was going on beneath Draco's jumper. He wanted them both naked. He was so overwhelmed that it almost didn't matter that the manor was freezing cold at all times. Draco grabbed Harry's thighs and pulled, grinding their cocks together so that they both gasped. "Whoever he was, he's probably horrible." "They weren't," Harry said, and hid his smile in Draco's neck. "But it's all right if you think so." "You really don't think this is a terrible idea?" "You're protesting a lot for someone whose hands are down my trousers." "Who am I fucking kidding? You love terrible ideas." Draco pulled his hands from Harry's jeans, which he was about to protest until he moved them up Harry's torso, taking his jumper with him. Harry sat up, still straddling Draco's lap, and extricated himself from his jumper. He did not care where it landed. It could burn up for all he cared at the moment. "Oh, Merlin, save us all," Draco breathed, looking up at Harry. He ran his hands down Harry's chest and hooked his thumb on one hip bone. "Fuck. It's a good fucking thing you don't know what you look like." "I have a mirror," Harry said, turning his attention to a patch of skin below the jut of Draco's jaw. "And no self-esteem, which is probably why this is... Oh, fuck!" Harry had pulled Draco's trousers down his hips and slithered down to get his mouth around his cock, licking messily and obnoxious around the head. Draco threw his head back until it hit the ground with a thunk. Harry stretched one arm across his torso and pressed at the centre of his chest, holding him to the floor. Draco covered Harry's hand with his own. Harry could not suppress a gasp, a moan. Draco was moaning too. They were both making too much noise, and this was a room that had held so much suffering and death and tragedy and centuries upon centuries of life before that. Incredibly, sacrilegiously, this felt like the most important thing that had ever happened between these walls. Harry kneeling over Draco and taking him into his mouth. Harry palmed his own cock, nearly humping Draco's shin with a thrill of it, which was probably hopelessly unerotic, but he couldn't help himself. He took Draco down now, down to the hilt. "Fuck, fuck," Draco panted and wound his free hand in Harry's hair. "What the shit is happening?" Harry popped off Draco's red, red cock. "It's called a blowjob," he said, smirking, his voice hoarse. I will. Draco did not seem to have words for what he would, which was in itself a record. He sat up instead, pulling Harry up with him until their chests were pressed together. "You're still wearing your jumper," Harry mumbled into Draco's mouth. "Shut up, Harry," Draco said, and got his hand around both their cocks. Draco's hand was spit slick, but it wasn't enough. There was almost too much friction. It didn't matter. They moved together, gasping. They kissed until they were too overcome to kiss any more, and then they breathed against each other's mouths. Draco's eyes were clear grey and fixed on him, wide with those improbable eyelashes. "Shit, shit," Draco hissed. "I'm going to..." The hot, wet surge of Draco's cum landed on Harry's stomach, spilled over to his thighs, coated his dick. Harry's vision went blurry. "Fuck. Oh, God. Draco," he babbled and came. Draco held him through it, cupping the back of his head and stroking gently until Harry finally went still. Harry rested his forehead against Draco's shoulder, dazed and almost shocked. "Huh," he said, reeling. "What?" Draco whispered, his hands shaking a little on Harry's bare lower back. "I think we should do that again," Harry said, biting lightly at Draco's neck. "Like, quite soon, I think." "Oh," Draco said, his hands pressed against Harry's back. "Was that..." Harry pulled back to examine Draco's face. His eyes were wide, almost fearful. "Was that all right?" "All right?" Draco blinked at him. "Yeah, I mean, was that okay with you?" Harry felt very cold all of a sudden. He did a quick, wandless cleaning charm and looked around for his glasses. He found them off to the side and slid them on. "Was that okay with me?" Draco repeated, voice faint. His cock was still out and his shirt was rucked up. He hadn't moved at all. Harry put his jumper back on and buttoned his jeans, feeling foolish. "Yeah, I mean, we don't have to..." Draco's hand covered Harry's. "Yes," he said very clearly. "Yes, that was okay with me. Merlin and Morgana both, Potter." Harry caught Draco's eye, starting to smile. "Really? You are a complete gibbering ghoul if you think otherwise." Draco yanked his trousers up over his hips again, then looked around the drawing room like he had never seen it before. "Oh, good. For a second I thought I had left some portraits in here." Harry could not help his snort of laughter. "Kinky. I can do kinky, but my ageing relations don't exactly do it for me. Sorry, I stopped listening on I can do kinky." Draco shot him an amused look. He was starting to look like his regular self again. He adjusted his jumper, getting slowly to his feet. "Come on, Potter," he said. "We're still on the clock." "And when we're not anymore?" Draco's ears went pink. "We'll see." Life was such a strange and unpredictable thing. Harry didn't know how he got to this point, but he wasn't complaining. He felt good. He felt happy. A silvery streak of light shot through the window and plummeted towards them before winging round their heads in a lopsided circle. The crow spoke with Morag's voice. "Got him! Meet at Edinburgh Apparition Point 6 immediately!" Harry did not feel good any more. He felt a bit sick. "Right," he said. "I'm off then." "Potter." "Harry." Something was struggling through Draco's expression, though Harry could not tell exactly what. "Will you keep hold of my bag? It's in the muniment room." Harry checked the floor for any discarded clothing and made sure his wand was in his pocket. "I'll be back later." He looked at Draco for a long, nauseous minute, and then, focusing on Edinburgh Apparition Point 6, whirled away from Wiltshire. Draco's pale face played in Harry's mind as he met Morag, and did what they had to do. Fishelburn and his associates were holed up in the cellar of an old house that had been converted into flats. In the midst of the blood and the screaming, the things that they found and the horrors they tried not to see, something was twisting in Harry's brain. He pushed it to the back of his mind and did his job. Draco sat in the middle of the floor by the Petworth staircase, sorting discarded sporting equipment into Muggles Might and Absolutely Not categories. The floorboards looked even worse up this close, scarred and pitted with chalk profanities scattered here and there. The lamp above his head had burnt out, but he was too ornery to fix it. He did not like the thought of Potter out there somewhere, seeing yet more horrible things. Hadn't Potter seen enough horrible things? Hadn't Potter's life been a succession of horrible things interspersed with applause? He didn't know what time it was. There was a pleasant solitude to the house when he was like this, anxious and heartsick and completely relieved to be alone. This passage didn't even have any portraits. The walls were bare but for tatty blue fleur-de-lis wallpaper and wainscoting that had once been white and now was a sort of ecru. The house, yawning and empty around him, felt like a protective coating.
"Master Draco!"
Coote's querulous voice reverberated through the house. "Master Draco!" Draco dropped an enchanted tennis racket into the no pile and clambered to his feet. "Coote, is there something wrong?" Coote appeared around the corner, her white hair in disarray around her enormous ears.
"Master Draco, it's Master Harry!"
Draco felt as if someone had hit him with a petrificus totalis. "What is it?" he demanded, one hand on the low bookcase for support. "Is he..."
"He appears not entirely injured," Coote said breathless, "but he is in the entrance hallway, Master Draco, and he is not looking very well, if you don't mind me saying so."
"No," Draco said faintly, starting forwards in the direction of a staircase that could actually get him bloody anywhere useful. "No, that's fine. Excuse me." Draco barreled through passages and doorways, halls and staterooms until he finally reached the great staircase. There, at the base, stood Potter.
"Who did this to you?" Draco demanded, hurtling down the stairs.
Harry looked down at his clothes, as if he had not noticed until just now that he was covered in blood. "It's not mine," he said.
"Great, great! That's less horrifying, although not by much."
Draco pulled Harry into the light so he could examine him properly. "We caught him." Harry watched Draco check him for injuries with a detached sort of interest.
"You get a gold star.
Is this bandage aesthetic or should it be properly closed?"
Draco pulled the fabric tighter around Potter's waist. "We need to get to some Mungo's."
"Morag thought I was going there," Harry said, looking up at the ceiling.
"You fucking..."
Draco could not think of an insult that could encompass both the horrible hot balloons swelling up in his chest and the impulse to smack Harry very hard around the head.
"I've had worse. I don't feel that bad, really."
"I do not trust literally anything you say about your physical well-being, Potter."
Draco could not help himself. He ran his hands along Harry's cheeks and into his hair. Something sticky greeted his fingers and he brought his hands from the mass of curls to see blood glinting red on his skin.
"You..."
Draco grabbed Harry's arm hard enough to hurt.
"I'm taking you to hospital."
Draco held tightly to Harry as they apparated away from Malfoy Manor, landing dizzily in the centre of a large brick alcove.
Move along," said a pink-haired nurse in pale blue robes.
He stopped, getting a glimpse of Harry's face.
"Is that..."
"No," said Harry.
"Yes,"
said Draco. "Urgent treatment, immediately, with your best healer."
"Ugh," Harry muttered. "I'm fine."
"You shut up," Draco demanded and turned to the nurse. "Only the saviour of the whole bloody world. No need to wait around instead of getting him the help that he very clearly needs. I'm sure that would go over very well in the papers."
"Oh," the nurse said, eyes wide.
"Of course, sir. I'll be just a minute. Come this way."
The nurse led them through reception, past double doors into a narrow corridor where witches and wizards with lime green robes stopped and stared right at Harry and Draco. Draco was not sure why they were so taken aback. Clearly, Potter was not an infrequent visitor. They turned through another pair of double doors and into accident and emergency. The pink-haired nurse approached a healer and had a furiously whispered conversation that seemed to involve the words procedure and Harry Potter, as well as a healthy dollop of public opinion. Draco kept a hold on Harry just in case and prepared himself to do a full Malfoy at the entirety of St. Mungo's if there were any delays. The healer finally gave a huff of defeat and strode up towards them in a fit of forced politeness, clutching her clipboard.
"Name," she said, and looked them both up and down.
"Really?" Draco drawled. "You want to know his name?"
"Harry Potter," said Harry.
He looked quite grey.
Draco drew himself up to his full height.
"Listen, healer, what exactly is your name?"
"Pennyfold," the healer said with pursed lips. "Rose Pennyfold, and I will take it from here, sir."
She managed to make sir sound like something one were to call a stroppy toddler.
"I have quite a lot of experience with auras, and I doubt your having a hissy fit will do anything to expedite this young man's treatment."
Healer Pennyfold efficiently detached Draco's hand from Harry's arm. "The visitor's tea room is on the fifth floor. I can have Nurse Nakamura keep you abreast of Mr. Potter's treatment. Now, if you will excuse me."
Draco, feeling as if he had been chastised by Coote or his childhood nanny,
watched as Hela Pennifold led Harry through yet another pair of double doors, speaking to him in a low voice. He was not sure what to do. He thought standing very still might be sufficient, only he had begun to feel the press of quite a few eyes on his back. In a cold rush, Draco realised that this was the first time he had been anywhere public in the wizarding world since the war. He had briefly stolen into a couple of apothecaries when he needed supplies, and Pansy had taken him to various small clothing boutiques. But for the most part, he had Coot do the shopping and confined himself to the world of the manor. Charity balls did not count, as he would be surrounded on all sides by people he had known since he was an infant. The Browns and the Parkinsons, the sad figure of Mrs. Crabbe, who always touched his shoulder and told him it was not his fault, even though it had been. Everyone here knew who Draco was. Everyone here knew what he had done. Or, possibly, they had just seen him with Harry Potter. Really, it could go either way. "Hey," said a raspy voice, and Draco whirled around to see Morag McDougal with her hands in her jacket pockets. "Thanks for bringing him in." Said Draco, scanning the room. He could see a few familiar faces, although he didn't know where they were from. His trial? Hogwarts? Morag rolled her eyes. "Right, I'm buying you a coffee. Come on." They took the rickety stairs to the fifth floor. Knots of people sat at tables with cold cups of tea and picked over pastries. There were a few curious glances, but for the most part, everyone seemed distracted by whatever, or whomever, had brought them to St. Mungo's in the first place. Draco could relate. He followed Morag like a man in a dream. "I'm fine, by the way. Thanks for asking," Morag said conversationally. "Also, I accept your congratulations for arresting a demented fuck and keeping him off the streets. Forgive me, but I don't really give a damn about that at the moment." Morag snorted. "You two are fucking hilarious, honestly." "It's fine, Draco. He's sustained worse." "That's what he said, and it didn't sound any less deranged then either." Draco stopped in front of a display of pre-made sandwiches. "You haven't called me Draco since we were kids." "Well, our parents started to avoid each other, and then you were an asshole for a while." Morag waited for the previous customer to receive their tea, then stepped in front of the counter. "Two coffees, please." Morag reached into her pockets and pulled out a handful of nuts, a hair tie, and what appeared to be a tulip bulb. "My girl is all about the gardening life," Morag told the bloke at the till. She refilled her pockets, took the coffees, and strode away without so much as looking at Draco. Draco caught up quickly. "Gardening? I like it too," Morag admitted, sitting at the small table near the window. "The one thing that great bloody house left in me was an appreciation for a good garden." "How is the McDougal estate?" "Oh, ruled over by an iron fist as usual," Morag shrugged. "Absolutely nothing has changed. It's practically preserved in aspic. I think my mother still lives like it's the 80s, and my father does whatever she tells him to do." It was entirely irrational, but Draco could not help the clench of envy in his chest. He could remember those years. Vince and Greg ruining their starched shirts climbing trees in the garden. His parents in their evening best, kissing him goodnight. The reassuring rules and predictability. He knew now that there had always been a dark underbelly, a rotten core, but it had been his childhood. He had been happy. "Oh, my God!" Morag leaned back from the table, her eyebrows stretching to her hairline. "Do not tell me you are one of those purebloods who are always on about the good old days. Fucking Christ." Draco didn't correct her. It seemed like too much effort. "Muggle swearing? Your mother must be furious." "It's the lady in my life," Morag explained. "Half-blood. I'm sure Alcyon Burke McDougal loves that. She had us for dinner last week." "How was it?" Morag pursed her mouth, considering. "Subtextual." Draco's laugh was weak, but it counted. "You know, she wouldn't care that I was with a woman, since it's not like I'm inheriting, but since Matilda isn't..." Morag shrugged. "You get it, right? Narcissa can't be pleased about." "My rampant homosexuality? No, I don't think she's exactly thrilled. Although she cares less about the perpetuation of the Malfoy name than she does about the fact that the Black name is extinct now." "Potter is a good wizarding name," Morag said over the rim of her cup. "Not Sacred 28, but you can't have everything. Most of those families died out by now anyway." "It's not like that," Draco said. He didn't think about the horrible drawing room and the decidedly not horrible things that had happened there.
Sure, Morag drawled,
clearly not believing a syllable he said. They drank their coffees and looked out the window at grey London, drizzle streaking the glass. Nurse Nakamura weaved through the tables like a hot pink beacon and came to an abrupt stop in front of Draco and Morag. Mr. Potter is in the Aura Ward, he told them. You can see him now.
That was fast, Draco said dumbly.
I told you, he's fine. Morag reached across the table to punch Draco's shoulder hard enough that he struggled not to fall out of his chair. Thanks, nurse. Nurse Nakamura shot a suspicious look Draco's way. He clearly expected more high-handed behaviour, but Draco was a little busy being relieved. When it became obvious nothing else was forthcoming, he nodded awkwardly and left almost at a jog. After a momentary pause, Draco spoke up.
Auras have their own beds.
Hit wizards and hit witches have their own personalised beds, Morag said. The Aura department has about 7 on reserve for whoever's been nearly killed recently. The hit wizards think this makes them more heroic. I think this makes them fucking stupid. Draco was very glad that Potter was not a hit wizard. He had once thought it would have been a better fit for Harry's Gryffindorian propensity for hurtling himself into danger, but now he saw that it would have been a terrible choice for him. He would clearly have died. They weaved their way through the tables towards the staircase, then headed downstairs to the 4th floor. Spell damage contained a large complex of wards, 2 of which apparently were devoted purely to the DMLE. Draco spotted healer Pennyfold at the end of the corridor and walked as quickly as he could without outright running. He's fine, healer Pennyfold told them as they halted in front of her. She ticked something off on her clipboard. Scrapes and bruises. The tail end of a hex and a concussion. We can release him in an hour as long as someone stays with him.
I will, Draco said immediately.
Morag snorted quietly. I'll have Nurse Nakamura come back in the designated time, healer Pennyfold said. She fixed them with a deeply unimpressed look, then seemed to wash her hands of the whole business and walked away.
Charming, Draco said and went into the ward.
The line of narrow beds was largely unoccupied, except for a sleeping witch at the very end by the window and Harry, propped up in the bed near the door.
Hey, said Harry with a flash of a smile.
The trouble with Potter wasn't just his cheekbones, or his hair, or his body. It was his jutting knuckles, the glimpse of brown neck beneath his messy hair, the way he pulled his mouth to the side when he was concentrating. The trouble with Potter was that Draco would be used to him, immune to it all, and then Potter would turn around and smile at him, and he would look so beautiful that Draco could not speak for a minute.
Hi, said Draco once he had recovered.
Oh, boy, Morag said. She looked between them, eyebrows raised.
I'm off. See you.
Bye, said Harry, not looking away from Draco.
So, Draco said, sitting gingerly at the foot of Harry's narrow bed, how was your heroic and potentially lethal work event?
Draco had not realised just how sweetly open Harry's face had been until he closed it all off, turning his face away like a candle snuffed out.
I don't want to talk about that.
Of course not, Draco huffed. He twined his hand in Potter's bedding. St. Mungo's really ought to invest in higher quality coverlets. What shall we talk about, then? Stocks? The weather?
Stocks?
I know things, Draco said wisely.
Your solicitor, Harry guessed.
He said I should try stocks. Draco leaned back against the end of the bed. The iron footboard pressed uncomfortably against his spine. I think they sound even worse than cheques or paper money.
Banknotes, Harry said.
His messy head lolled a bit against the pillows, and he smiled at Draco in a sleepy sort of way. Draco glanced at the witch by the window. She was sleeping, but it was still too much company for what he wanted to do to Potter. He didn't want to fuck him. Well, he did, but not immediately. It was much, much worse. He wanted to kiss his forehead. Draco could not bear himself.
I had another visit from a poltergeist, Draco told him instead of doing anything incriminatingly soppy.
Oh, Harry frowned. There was something... What happened just before you saw it?
Draco tried to recall.
I was in the muniments room, sorting papers. I had just been handling one of the ledgers. The binding was falling apart. I repaired it. Harry's eyes went wide. Draco, who made your wand? Not the old one, the new one. Chap called Herodotus Smethwick. Why? Not Ollivander. No, I thought it was a bit crass, considering the several months in the late 90s he spent locked in my cellar. Oh, said Potter, face falling. The motive... Draco frowned. He's one of his apprentices. Oh! Harry had a look on his face Draco did not like. Do not, he began. But it was too late. Harry had struggled to his feet and was staggering towards the door. Draco raced after him and caught him under the elbow. Absolutely not. You have a concussion. Barely, Harry said, not paying any attention. He pulled them both forwards towards the door. We've got to catch Morag before she leaves. Right now, Draco, right now. Draco looked incredulously down at Harry. Do a bloody Patronus, Harry. Oh, Harry said, falling back. Oh, right. He pulled out his wand and sent a silvery stag racing out of the ward. They sat on the edge of an unoccupied bed until Morag came strolling through the doorway like she was in no particular hurry. Draco had no idea how Harry had not known she was a pureblood. You called, she drawled. I know what's wrong with Malfoy Manor, Harry said, and Draco stared at him. It's the wand, the Lord of the Manor wand. It's tied to the property, right? And to the owner? There's something wrong with the enchantments. Draco pulled out his wand and stared at it. He had never liked this wand, not really. It didn't feel friendly to his fingers, but he'd always chalked that up to reservations about the old wand. The one that had been the family 1,000 years before the Dark Lord wrested it from his father's fingers. Oh, Draco said softly. Herodotus Smethwick. He hadn't even really known him, but he'd come to the manor, made the wand from the family wand tree and performed the ancient rituals. He'd made jokes about the gargoyles. Draco would never have suspected that he'd hated him all along. Oh, all right, Morag said, looking deeply uninterested at the clear lack of gore and or blood. Rogue wand maker's not exactly a huge dark wizard, is it? I'll let the hit wizards know. They can handle him. Take the wand too, Harry said. Don't use it. I don't know what it'll do. Have the artifact division look it over. Draco looked down at his wand. He didn't want to hand it over. It was his. Even more than that, the manor wouldn't be his without it. Harry prized the wand from his fingers impatiently, then handed it to Morag. We'll get you a new wand once we figure out what Smethwick did to this one. It'll be all right. It's not so bad. Harry was holding his hand. Draco looked down at their fingers and tried not to feel like something had been taken from him, some part of his identity. He didn't know if he could even go back to the manor without his wand. Would the doors even open for him? Okay, said Morag in a bored sort of voice. She glanced at their hands. Not like that, huh, Draco? Come on, Morag, Harry said. This century, maybe. Okay, okay, Morag said, holding her hands up. She pointed at Harry with Draco's wand, which was very unpleasant. Draco remembered every time he had pushed her into Hinkypunk's stream as a child. You have mandatory leave tomorrow, so don't come in. Bye, Harry said boredly. Morag rolled her eyes, saluted them both and then disappeared into the corridor, taking Draco's wand with her. If you say one more thing about what you deserve, Harry began, but Draco cut him off. I don't know if... He took a breath, forcing himself to finish the statement. I don't know if the manor will let me in without the wand. Harry didn't make fun of him, or call him land-obsessed or needlessly sentimental. We can go back to mine, he said instead. I'll owl Ollivander tomorrow. Okay, Draco said, and they sat together holding hands until Nurse Nakamura cleared Harry to leave.